I think what's under consideration is a proposal that Senator Wyden and the Senate Finance Committee have been looking at that would impose a tax on unrealized capital gains on liquid assets held by extremely wealthy individuals, billionaires. I wouldn't call that a wealth tax, but it would help get at capital gains, which are an extraordinarily large part of the incomes of the wealthiest individuals. And right now, escape taxation until they're realized, and often they're unrealized and at death, benefit from so-called step-up of basis. So it's not a wealth tax, but a tax on unrealized capital gains of exceptionally wealthy individuals.
No, what it is it's communism, and people don't understand what capital gains taxes are or what capital gains are, period. This is one of the stupidest. This is the Treasury Secretary. Welcome to the show. Happy Monday to you. I'm Dana Lash, danalash.com. Welcome to the radio program. You can find us at danalash.com. And then, of course, sign up for the newsletter as well. All kinds of good stuff that are sent out regularly from that. So to me, one of the top concerns that I see here. And this is something, before you think that this is just kind of her speaking off the cuff, just so you know, this is actually her discussing something that's going to be incorporated actually into whatever budget bill they're going to be doing. Because remember, they have that stopgap on that that's going to be till December. And so as a result, this is, I guess, one of the things that they're negotiating and trying to include in that whole tax and the tax and scheme plan. That's all it is. This is crazy. So I feel like we need to discuss what capital gains are, because there are clearly people who don't know what they are.
The most important part, though, yes, capital gains, but she said unrealized.
I know, and I'm going to get to that.
No, but that's
I'm going to get to it.
You see
Calm
me.
Calm the hell down.
You
Kane,
see me
Kane.
Reacting here, right?
I know. I'm going to get to it. So this whole soundbite from her, There's a number of things. First off, you know, capital gains can be, you know, your stocks. It can be, you know, what it's what you're making when you're selling something. So how do you? So, I mean, there's a million questions to ask here. I mean, I'm like actually kind of short circuiting, because every time I hear this, I just get angrier and angrier at it. The problem is that, listen to this. Like, imagine, for instance, 401ks, right? Over 90% of 401ks. Are in the form of stocks. You have a tax like this, what she's talking about, this is asset seizure is what this is. Imagine the sell-off you would have with that. A massive market crash. Then you would have a depression that would be unlike anything this country has ever seen. I mean, she's talking about a fake, make-believe imaginary number. That's what she's talking about. She's talking about an imaginary number. She's talking about something that is based on the increased value of whatever investment you have if you choose to sell. So she's talking about taxing something that is not actually in existence at the moment. That's insane. That's a seizure. It's not just asset. This is like a seizure of whatever you're doing in the future. Now, here's my other question. Like, what if you pay a tax on this and then actually the value depreciates? What do you honestly think that the government's going to cut you a check? Do you honestly think the government's going to cut you a check? Do you really think so? The government, the IRS? I don't think so. Not at all. That's one of the craziest things. This is straight up communism. And there, and she wants to. This is not just some like rando. This is the Treasury Secretary. bad news bear, man. This is the Treasury Secretary. This is Janet Yellen. So this major, there's a lot of things that are, I mean, where to even start? I mean, I'm looking at 401ks. Their solution to their spending and making up for the spending, this doesn't solve it. You know, we've talked about how you can tax all the wealthiest people in the country and it still doesn't make up for the deficit because they will not control their spending. So, I mean, wait, so are you paying capital gains when you're realizing gains? So you have, how many levels of taxation is that? Crazy. All these people, like, it's time to tax the rich. This actually hits everybody. This doesn't hit just the rich. There's a great piece in the Wall Street Journal. It says the proposal, they keep trying to act like, oh, this is only going to affect like so many people. Actually, no, this is like everything. They're talking about a wealth tax. Nancy Pelosi's demanding on having a wealth tax in this. She wants a wealth tax. But this is multiple levels of taxation. I mean, you're paying capital gains tax when you're realizing gains. So you have corporate, unrealized, and realized taxes on one thing, right? Yeah. So say you're paying this on stocks. What happens if you have a stock that decreases in value? I mean, there's a million questions from this. This is how stupid and unrealistic something like this actually is. The United States is engaged in actual economic suicide. That's what this policy just expedites. I mean, this is about forced liquidation. This is really ultimately what it is. It's forced liquidation. Now, they say that this is likely going to be in the budget package. That's what they're arguing right now. Is whether or not this is going to be in the package. I hope it's not. That would be really unfortunate. 75% of Americans actually oppose the concept of taxing unrealized gains. Unrealized gains. That's such a made up word. And she thinks that this is going to help pay for the Build Back Better Act. She's like, no, it's not a wealth tax. It's no. It, and for everyone who say, and here's the other thing I see that they try to hide behind all the time. They say, well, no, this is only going to affect like the wealthiest, you know, XYZ. That does not make any of this okay. Even if that were true. Remember, they said your taxes weren't going to increase, but now what are you doing with, they did. And also, what are you looking at with inflation? It's the silent tax is what it is. Unrealized. I wondered why that word was trending when I woke up this morning. Unrealized. This is such Marxist garbage. And we're going to talk more about it because this and the IRS wanting to get involved in your bank account. This is reckless language from a woman who's risking a lot more than just unpopularity. This is tea in the harbor stuff. This is actually past tea in the harbor stuff. And if you think that's crazy to say, it's crazy that someone would force you to liquidate your assets to pay for a tax on things that don't exist. That's crazy. We're going to talk more about this. We got some headlines on Bidenflation as well. And some of the latest as it relates to coronavirus. The CDC director says there's going to be education and counseling for the unvaxxed. And all of the discussions that we have about people getting in trouble in New Zealand and elsewhere and in Australia, etc. There were some officers that had taken down apparently this guy who wasn't wearing a mask, and this is on the east. Apparently they weren't wearing a mask at all, and I guess that's enough to get somebody like in serious trouble. This was in actually it was in Canada, right by New York. And this guy did not wear a mask and he was tackled to the ground. So now it's like spreading. I knew Canada was kind of crazy, but now they're tackling people to the ground in Canada. Meanwhile, the majority of Americans think the coronavirus threat is getting less and less serious. because they're following the science, even when their representatives aren't. I want to play for you this audio from Jacinda Ardern. She is the New Zealand Prime Minister. And she was asked by a reporter whether or not these individuals who have not been vaccinated, whether or not they're going to, that Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand would create a two-tier society for these people. Listen to this.
So you basically said this is going to be like, well, it's almost like you probably don't see it like this, the two different classes of people. If you're vaccinated or if you're unvaccinated, you have all these rights. If you are vaccinated.
That is what it is. So, yep.
Dude. And she smiled when she said it. She's like, yeah, that is what it is. Yep, that's exactly what it is. Wow. That's kind of, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty, whoo boy. It's, I'm telling you what, the more people follow the science and the more that they see that this is, that our leaders aren't following the science, the more, I think, the greater a crackdown you're going to have on this. We have a lot to hit today. We've got some of the latest with Dems. We're going to talk more about this BS unrealized gain nonsense, because this is economic. It's economic suicide. That's what this is. It's economic suicide. And then Anthony Fauci is under, I can't even hardly talk about this story. I actually can't read it because I can't find a way to get the pictures out. It's hard enough. Why? Our taxpayer dollars are funding horrific animal abuse. And Fauci knows about it. And Rand Paul is demanding an apology from him as well. So this all is insane. Where our society is just absolute garbage. We're also going to get into the latest with Alec Baldwin because there's new developments. And of course, tech, because YouTube and Instagram are banning accounts that post Let's Go Brandon songs. And now you have that. And then you have a lawmaker who was kicked off of Twitter because he did not call a man who identifies as a woman as a she. With temperatures cooling off, don't let that stop you from getting outside and into the great outdoors. Take Black Rifle Coffee Company with you anywhere with their ready-to-drink cans and on-the-go packs. Black Rifle Coffee Company is veteran-owned and serves premium coffee to people who love America. They develop explosive roast profiles and experiment with new roasting methods with mission focus to bring you the best coffee possible. And with every purchase you make, Black Rifle Coffee gives back with over 6 million cups of coffee donated to veteran, law enforcement, and first responder causes in 2020 alone. The best way to enjoy freedom-filled coffee is with Black Rifle Coffee Club. Join the club and have your chosen brew roasted, packaged, and shipped free to your door on your schedule. Get discounted pricing on roasts and access to exclusive products, members-only content, and partner discounts. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/DanaTV to find what inspires you. Use code DanaTV for 20% off your first coffee club purchase, coffee, and select gear. That's 20% off with promo code DanaTV at blackriflecoffee.com/DanaTV. Fuel your life with America's coffee. Black Rifle Coffee.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
So Kellogg's was sued for $5 million over a lack of strawberries in their Pop-Tarts. It's strawberry-flavored Pop-Tarts. Apparently, according to this class-action lawsuit, it's filed in the Southern District of Illinois. They say that Kellogg's is misleading customers because they're promoting their Pop-Tarts, and they say that they have strawberry filling. And it says they give the impression that the fruit filling contains a greater relative and absolute amount of strawberries than it does. Somebody actually took this suit on. So they said that they cannot provide a true strawberry taste since it's overwhelmed by significant amounts of pears and apples, and the red food coloring gives people the false impression. And so if this one moronic woman had not have known the truth, then she would not have purchased the Pop-Tarts. It's a Pop-Tart. It's a pastry in a box. What'd you think it was going to have in it? Jeez. So insane. People are nuts. That kind of stuff, like, I cannot, that kind of litigation, that's what makes it bad for everybody, right? Is Major League Baseball going to move the World Series out of Atlanta? Do you remember that? I mean, remember, MLB decided in April that they moved the All-Star Game out of Atlanta in response to the voting law that's actually way more open and easy than even Delaware's or Colorado's. And so they played the game in Colorado, and they have fewer early voting days in Georgia. Well, now the Braves made it to the World Series when they defeated the Dodgers. So now what's going to happen? Are they going to pull the World Series? Are they going to force them to play like somewhere else? I'm curious. That's the big question. Where are you at, MLB? We are all eagerly anticipating your answer here. Just, you know, FYI. I know, everybody, I can barely talk about this story. Anthony Fauci and the animal testing, he's under fire because apparently NIH, with his knowledge and approval, because he helps direct funding as head of NIH, they would take dogs and beagles, because beagles are the nicest animals and those are the ones that are used mostly in this horrific, cruel animal testing. They stick their heads in boxes and then they had fruit flies eat them alive. I don't know what test this is supposed to accomplish. I am not even going to tell you what my response to this is. Sand flies. Thank you. They had them eat them alive. I have no words about this. I think I just can't get, honestly, like colleges that actually do the animal testing and all of that. You guys can make fun of me for this. I'm so hardcore on this. I threw all of those letters from colleges out. I told my kids I'm not even going to consider any university that's involved in this, and I threw it in the trash. That was like a year ago, so still there. We got a lot more on the way, kids. Don't go anywhere. More of The Dana Show coming up. Woo!
Hey there. We have a new sponsor that I am really excited about, Bonner Wines. If you enjoy wine as much as I do, then you need to try Extreme Altitude Malbec from Argentina. They make it up at these remote vineyards at 9,000 feet. These things are miles from civilization. And the result is this inky red wine. You stare into this thing, and it's like looking at your soul. They're also healthier than the other wines, with 10 times more longevity-boosting resveratrol and 90% less sugar. Ladies, no dyes, no flavor additives. Pop open a bottle and you're going to get blackberry, leather, smoke, a little dark cherry. And the best part is that you're not paying these inflated prices that the traditional big box wine makes you pay. There is no middleman. So if you enjoy wine, if you'd like to taste wine as it truly should taste, visit conservativewines.com. And Dana Show listeners will get 50% off of the wine and 50% off of shipping. Just visit conservativewines.com.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern time.
We don't have time to be wasting on these phony, trumped-up culture wars. Ooh. This fake outrage that the right-wing media is peddles to juice their ratings. And the fact that he's willing to go along with it instead of talking about serious problems that actually affect serious people, that's a shame. That's not what this election's about. That's not what you need, Virginia. Instead of forcing our communities to cut back at a time when we're just starting to recover, we should be doing more to support people who are educating our kids and keeping our neighborhoods safe.
Yeah. I didn't realize that the rape of a freshman girl in her high school bathroom was just trumped up fake outrage. Barack Obama, former President Barack Obama, calls the rape of a freshman girl in our high school bathroom trumped up fake outrage. Huh. True story. You heard it here.
So did the Loudoun County Board.
Right, yeah. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here, danalash.com. That's insane. That response. He's out there trying to bail out McAuliffe. Jeez. McAuliffe was like, this is going to be an easy win, but it's not. Biden took that state by 10 points in 2020. He took that state by 10 points. And now the fact that it is as close as it is that says something. That's pretty significant. That's incredibly significant. Telling you what. Hoo, hoo, hoo. So a few things here, and I keep seeing this over and over again. There's some developments with the Baldwin stuff. And I was talking about this on Twitter just a little bit earlier. And I saw, so The Hill had a story. Baldwin was practicing drawing the gun when it discharged. Remember, because he had accidentally killed this woman on set, the director of photography, and then wounded the director of his film, which apparently is never going to get done now, I'm not surprised. So a couple of different developments here. First and foremost, I don't like to speculate on air with this stuff, but I was off air. I was talking to some of the some of the folks that I work with, and I'm like, honestly, what kind of seems like it happened is that because they do some actors on some films, they'll do live fire training, right? They'll do live fire drills so that they can understand what it feels, what the full recoil feels like of a firearm when they're shooting. Because if they're using a blank, you may not get the exact same kind of recoil because, you know, you don't have as much propellant. And so you want to make sure that you kind of know the difference and you can act to it. And the second thing is that apparently I don't think anybody checked that gun. And he was apparently practicing a cross draw, from what I understand. And he was saying, like, do it like this. Like, he was on set filming and it was like a break in filming. And they were, I guess, instructing him on what to do. That's what I was reading. It's stupid. I cross draw. I don't know. I liked, for instance, Denzel Washington's character on the remake of The Magnificent Seven, because he on Fuqua was Magnificent Seven, which is one of my top five favorite films. And the soundtrack is one of my top soundtracks. And Denzel Washington's one of my favorite actors on God's green earth. I mean, he's a gift to the art form. I love Westerns. Westerns are my favorite. Westerns and then horror films. My absolute favorite. That's my favorite genre. I've seen everything. My Name is Nobody is one of my top three. I mean, I've seen everything. So Magnificent Seven, you know, you had the great cinematography, you had the amazing score and the tragic story behind that composer. And then you had, you know, the great, great script, and you had some really great direction from Fuqua, who is also doing my friend Jack Carr's, his thing coming up with Chris Pratt and his Terminalist series. I'm really excited to see what that looks like, because I like the way that he directs. And I like the people that he chooses to work with, because every shot is like a standalone still. You know, it just looks real great. Anyway, long story short, I always thought it was interesting the way that Denzel Washington's character carried his revolvers backwards. And he'd have to cross draw like that. Well, you know, you flag yourself every single time you do it. So it's not really, you know, they'll tell you it's not the best. Of course, that was out in the old West days, Wild West days. And apparently, I guess that's what Baldwin was doing on this, which I also think is dumb. And I think if you're working with people who don't know anything about firearms, maybe don't have them cross draw. But the thing is that, so they were working on set. And as I said before, and I have some friends who work in Hollywood. And they were saying that there are many times those who have not fired guns before, and they are supposed to, as part of their role on set, what they'll do is they'll do some live fire drills with the armorer and some weapons specialist there, so that they can understand what it feels like, how it behaves, how the firearm, whether it's a rifle or a handgun, how it behaves in your hand, all that. And then so when they carry it out on set, you know, even if it's a blank, then they can have that simulated. And here's the other thing to come back to. Not quite sure, because there's a piece from The Hill that says apparently this was checked by the armorer, and then it was checked by the director who handed Baldwin the gun. And I've been seeing from Baldwin, well, about Baldwin, that, oh, he was just handed the gun. He was just handed the gun. He didn't know, you know, whatever. I'm going to come to that in a minute. The first thing is that it's really simple to check. It's very easy to tell whether something's a live round or a blank, because the top of it is of the casing is crimped on a blank, because you don't have like the bullet that ever, you know, the, you don't have that in there. It's, you'll have a less amount of propellant, and then you wad it up with like wax or something else so that you have that reaction out of the muzzle or out of the barrel, and you have a bit of recoil and you have the sound, but you don't have the projectile. Although things even with a blank can still go wrong. That being said, it is so damn easy to check that. So when you're on the range, whenever we're doing any kind of drills or anything like that, they do what's called a press check. And what you do is you bring back that slide and you look and see what's chambered. And you can tell, depending on how far back, you know, you're taking, you know, how far back you're pulling, you know, the slide, the top part of the gun, how far, if you're working with handguns or if you're working with a rifle or something, how far back you rack it back. You can tell whether or not that's a bullet in there, and it's a full bullet, and, you know, you can see the tip of it, or if it's, you know, a blank. It's not. So that makes me think nobody actually checked this, number one. So yeah, there's some culpability there, and absolutely, there's probably going to be a criminal charge. But secondly, and it comes down to this, Baldwin, he's a 40-year veteran of films. He's done a number of films with tons of firearms involved. I don't give a rat's ass how many people check the damn thing before they put it in your hand. You still have the responsibility to check that weapon when it is placed in your hand. I don't care if you're an actor. I have friends who are veterans and friends who are not veterans, and every single one of them says any scene that they do where someone is handing them, someone's shooting at them, or I had a friend who was in on a major, major cable series, and he's a working actor, and I don't want to name his name, but he was saying, apparently in one of the scenes, he had a gun held to his head, and he was like, there was no way, anytime I walked on that set, I checked it, and it didn't leave my sight, not at any point. And that responsibility ultimately will fall on whoever has the handgun, whoever has the firearm in their hand. It does not fall on anybody else. So I think it's offensive for whether it's him or anybody else to sit here and say that it is, oh, well, he's not to blame. If you see anyone say that on Fox, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Need to shut up. If you see anyone saying that on CNN or MSNBC, I don't care who it is. I don't care what network it is. These people should shut up and they should listen to actual people who understand firearms and firearm safety. Bottom line, reject anything to the contrary of that. I've seen a number of people. I've even seen some friends of mine say this. And I settle disputes privately. If you see me trying to settle something publicly, that's because they didn't do it privately. They didn't want to. But I've actually reached out to some people that I've seen over the past few days. And I'm like, no, that is incorrect. And let me explain to you why it's incorrect. It's incredibly dangerous to promote that kind of irresponsibility. I would not step onto a range with a single soul who thought that it was not their responsibility, whatever happened with the barrel of that gun when they were holding it. I wouldn't walk into a range with anybody like that. I wouldn't be in their vicinity, on range or off range, to be honest with you. And you shouldn't either. It's dangerous. And that kind of stuff promotes recklessness. And I don't like that. Ultimately, bottom line, it was in his hand. From everything that's been reported that we know publicly now, I don't know how he doesn't get a charge. I really do not know how he doesn't get a charge. And the other thing is that apparently they were having a big fight with a union. They had a bunch of union prop masters and a bunch of people walk off. So they had replaced their armorer with someone who was local. And I see them going after this chick hardcore. They were going after her in Daily Mail. They had a whole piece they found. They looked and they tried to make her look like a gun bunny. I don't know anything about this chick. Do you all know what a gun bunny is? It's TNA that sells guns and they don't know how to shoot. That's a gun bunny, right? Think Playboy holding a gun. That's a gun bunny. Now, you can have attractive women that know how to shoot, for sure. But gun bunnies pose. They don't shoot. So that's what it's almost like they were trying to make her out like that. And that kind of made me mad. They said careless armorer. And I don't know. And maybe she was. I'm not defending her. I'm just saying this is the approach of it. She's 24. They say careless and inexperienced armorer on Baldwin rest set halted filming on movie. They said she... Because apparently they had two misfires on this film already, on set already. And so they said Hannah Gutierrez Reed, 24, had a history of reckless behavior around weapons and was a bit careless with guns. They said that she previously gave a child actor a gun without checking it on the set of Nicolas Cage's The Old Way. They said she was seen loading blanks in an unsafe fashion. They said the assistant director, everyone's sitting here blaming everybody except including Baldwin. I'm not saying he gets the sole blame, but he gets blame. So, and the way that they present this girl, this armorer, they try to make her look like a skank. They do. And that enrages me. Because ultimately, it comes down to who was the guy that held the gun and squeezed the trigger. Right? Who was the guy who did that? And I say this because it's not this. I don't like Baldwin. My comments here would be it'd be for anybody, regardless. You got to have some of the blame. You know, I've been on ranges where, when you're flagging people, they'll shut the whole damn thing down. If it's a serious range, that is a serious trespass. That's a serious thing on a range. And they shut you down. That's why gun etiquette, people think that you're being petty when you bring it up. There's a reason that we bring it up. And that's why. stuff like this. And I'm going to tell you one last thing. Maybe if people had listened to folks like me and others a little bit more instead of screaming at us that we were murderers, we wouldn't be having situations like this. You know, maybe we kind of do know what we're talking about, and it's not all politics. You know, there's a thought. Now, that being said, while I think that he's culpable, and I do think that he should be charged, I think that all the people who were in that chain of command of that weapon, I do think all of them, I do think they should be charged. I don't think that he intentionally murdered somebody. And I'm sure that he's probably really working with some stuff. But at the same time, this was completely avoidable and entirely reckless and irresponsible. So this is what happens when you refuse to teach people about firearms. We got a lot more to touch on too, folks, as we get moving here. So we have the war on candy corn. Did you guys hear, like, there was a candy maker that got hacked? I will fight people. I'll fight all of them. I'll take all comers. Candy corn is one of the best, if not the best, Halloween candy. And I'll fight you. It's delicious. I don't care if it tastes like wax. God bless America. It's delicious wax. So we're going to talk about that here coming up. And we're also going to get into some of the latest with the economy. Now they're trying to put a push to ban driving. I'll share this NBC headline with you here coming up. We got some tech stuff for you. We got all kinds of stuff. So you don't want to miss a single second of the show. And it's our Halloween bumper tracks. So you don't want to miss any of the Halloween tunage too, because you know we have the best. Nobody even comes close to touching us. Nobody. This year, Kel-Tec is celebrating 30 years of game-changing innovation and performance. A privately owned family company that began making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms in 1995. In 1999, Kel-Tec launched their brand on the scene by forever redefining the concealed carry handgun. And from that point on, Kel-Tec continues to innovate and create never-before-seen firearms, pistols, rifles, and shotguns alike, never copying firearms, always innovating new ones. Kel-Tec believes in respect, family, the right to bear arms, and in the love we all have for our great country. They do things right. All Kel-Tec firearms are proudly made right here in America in a true family culture that embraces every employee and where people are genuinely happy to come to work. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. Find out more about Kel-Tec firearms by visiting KelTecWeapons.com for a deeper dive on all aspects of their innovative firearms. That's KelTecWeapons.com to learn more about my friends at Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec, game-changing innovation and performance.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others.
The Dana Show.
DanaLash.com. Little gorillas with some Dracula. It's our Halloween mix, and you can go find my Halloween list up on Spotify. I'll make sure to tweet it out as well, and I'll include it in your prep email today that you get when you subscribe to Chapter and Verse, the Substack newsletter. I actually like this song from the Gorillaz. This is what I love the, like, that slow, cool, rocksteady beat. Anyway, a great track. Get you in the mood for Halloween coming up this Sunday. All Hallows Eve, everybody. So, candy corn. Best Halloween candy. I'll fight anybody. I did not realize. I tweeted this out a week ago, and I think this was more divisive than anything I've ever said, ever, in the history of anything. I think it was the most divisive thing I think I've ever said. Oh my gosh, people were really not happy about that. So I saw, and I'm pulling this story up too, because apparently there was a candy corn manufacturer, like a candy corn, they've been hacked. Gizmodo had the story, a ransomware gang targeted Ferrera candy, and they are the people who do Brax candy corn. Is it Brax or Brox? I've always said
Brox.
I have this syndrome called Nana syndrome, where I will mispronounce the most obvious things. And candy corn, the Brox candy corn, right? That's like that's the Halloween treat. Everybody sees it, right? And they also make the fall harvest, which is the little pumpkins. But I just like the candy corn.
Top shelf.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the top shelf of the wax candy. They're based in Chicago. They're responsible for 85% of the candy corn. All right. My friend Glenn Jacobs, mayor of Knoxville County down there, he was the one who sent this up to me. They make 7 billion pieces of this candy per year. So the attack occurred on October 9th, encrypted some of their systems. They said they're working with law enforcement. But you're probably going to see fewer Brax candy corn packages out there. I'm all stocked up. Your girls, and I don't like mean I save it year to year because that stuff gets stale. You got to have the fresh, chewy stuff. That is just, it is the best. It really is the best candy corn. I'm not going to play. But there's a war on candy corn. Oh, yes, this is happening. And I think, you know, only communists hate it. They had Mike Leach on Halloween candy. I'll play this here coming up because I had to tell you about the hacked candy corn thing. They asked Mike Leach about candy corn. He was slamming my candy corn. I'll play that audio for you coming up. Also, unrealized cap gains. Janet Yellen is on crack. What's the size of the rock she's hitting? We'll discuss when we return. Do you find yourself turning on the news and feeling kind of hopeless? Open borders, spending gone crazy, the prospect of more mandates, inflation, the list goes on. There is something that you can do. You can buy from companies that believe what you believe and support your right to believe what you want to believe. We need to stick together now more than ever. And there has been one company that's willing to stand with you and has done so since 2012, and that's Patriot Mobile. It's America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer broad nationwide coverage. In fact, they use the same towers as all the other major carriers. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, and their 100% U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional customer support. More importantly, Patriot Mobile shares your values and supports organizations that fight for religious freedom, your constitutional rights, sanctity of life, veteran and first responders as well. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and get free activation with offer code Dana. Get special discounts for veterans and first responders, also multi-line accounts. Support a company that loves America and shares your values. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT.
I think what's under consideration is a proposal that Senator Wyden and the Senate Finance Committee have been looking at that would impose a tax on unrealized capital gains on liquid assets held by extremely wealthy individuals, billionaires. I wouldn't call that a wealth tax, but it would help get at capital gains, which are an extraordinarily large part of the incomes of the wealthiest individuals. And right now, escape taxation until they're realized, and often they're unrealized and at death, benefit from so-called step-up of basis. So it's not a wealth tax, but it's a tax on unrealized capital gains.
She can repeat this all she wants to, and that doesn't make it any less ridiculous. I mean, that's this. Oh my gosh. Welcome back to the show. It's Monday. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here, danalash.com. Go sign up for that newsletter. Chapter and verse. That's the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen. She says that in order to basically help, in order to help finance the Build Back Better plan, you have to have a tax on unrealized capital gains. First off, can someone explain to me how the 16th Amendment allows for the taxation of unrealized capital gains? Anybody want to hit that? Because you could sit here, you could try to pass it if you want and then have fun with that in court. How does that even, now, wait a minute, because the 16th Amendment defines incomes for, and by the way, sidebar, taxation is theft. Burn it down. Back to the point. 16th Amendment, when you're talking about income and sources derived, that, I mean, you could say that there might be many different variations of that interpretation, but the Supreme Court clarified that definition. And they were saying that that's like profit through the sale. It included profit through the sale or conversion of capital assets. So it would sound as though it has to be realized. Kane, you're dying over here. Kane's going to explode. So everybody wait. Everybody hold up. Take your drink.
Right, that's fine.
Grab your table. Okay, go, Kane, go.
Buckle in. Because unrealized gains are not realized. In other words, you said last time we talked about this, this is not something that is in existence yet. So for me, when I hear her say that, not only does it make me livid, but I also want my unrealized capital losses to be written off on my taxes then, if that's the case. Because, you know, that's what happens. When you get into the stock market, you buy some stocks, the value goes down. And for a while, you could have capital losses until the value of that stock goes back up, and then you have unrealized gains until you decide to sell that stock. And then when you sell the stock, then your gains are realized. And then, of course, if you have gains, you pay taxes on them, which is currently already in the system, already in our tax code. You already pay on your capital gains. So for her to try to go after unrealized is, like you said, communism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't believe they can pass whatever they want, but I don't. I don't see how it works. I don't see how that survives a constitutional challenge in SCOTUS. I don't. So that's just like one aspect of it here. And what Kane's discussing. These people think that, well, you know, taxing these unrealized capital gains, it's the only way to actually do anything about equality. I've actually seen people say this. Oh, for the love, help us. This is why things suck. If you ever wonder, why is it that things suck sometimes? Because of those people. That's why. It's why. It's because of those people. Oh, my gosh. You know what? I feel like that would be a great thing to do for Halloween, to determine who gets the regular size and who gets fun size. Oh, sidebar. Fun size apparently got smaller in certain candies.
What?
Yeah. And it was never fun size. Is it more fun to get less? Is it funner to get less? Yeah, the M&M fun size M&Ms are like four M&Ms.
Yeah, there's like eight M&Ms.
Yeah, that's lame. That's lame, right? Because you know, everybody knows that to eat M&Ms, you drink them, right? It's like, you like chug the bag. That's how, right? Same thing with snow caps, because that's just a hot mess. Snow caps are just, yeah. It is. And Juan made a note. It's fun size, like my margarita machine. I have a margarita machine. I kept it in studio because we would fill it and we would run it every with hate mail, right?
Yeah.
And now I've, for our, the, this is, you don't need to know all this. Why am I telling you this? For the Dana Show Christmas party, because we have one, we're having it. I rented one because mine's fun size. My margarita machine is fun sized.
But it's really not. It's like,
it is, though.
It literally is a giant
picture. But it's fun sized.
But you've actually rented a one that's, what, three times the size of this
Oh,
one?
My gosh. I could, like, yeah. We could live off it forever. It's gonna be amazing. God bless America that you have that, too. Unreal. So I just think that maybe, ask your trick-or-treaters or their, shout out their parents. What do y'all think about taxing unrealized capital gains? And then, depending on what they say, that's how you should react with your candy. In fact, you should take their candy out of the right out the hell out of their little pumpkin basket. If they say, we support that. Oh, well, here it is in effect. There it is. I'm going to liquefy this for you right now. Just saying. That's what it is. And this, you're going to get, this is going to so damage the economy, because I just want to come back again to one of the things we've always said. Where do you get a lot of that seed money for new startups? Or, well, that's redundant. For startups, for new businesses. Capital gains. So, and what, small businesses drive 60% the jobs in the economy. And this is just dumb. Golly. What is this? How does this affect Bitcoin? Wouldn't that?
It's the same.
Yeah.
Let's say you bought Bitcoin a few years ago, like when it was $8,000, and now right. It's around $60,000. So, and you still are holding Bitcoin. You haven't sold it. You're still holding it. Those unrealized gains on every coin you may have purchased is somewhere in the 50,000, 52,000 range. So she wants to tax you on that 52,000 that you haven't sold. You haven't realized that you don't have that money yet. It's just still represented in Bitcoin, just the same as stock or anything else. You haven't sold it, so therefore it's unrealized. She still wants to take your money for that.
Boy, oh boy. I also don't like the justification that I see people on the left that they have for this. They're like, no, people are spreading just lies and some mistruths about this because it does not target the middle class. I mean, it only goes out. I don't care. Let's just say for one second that it does not affect the middle class, which we know is a lie, but we're just going to play along for these people. So because it doesn't affect you, it's okay? Because you think that abuse of the rule of law is never going to come down to you? You think that it's because it's okay to go after some people because of their wealth, right? That's like that. It look, for instance, Elon Musk. He's like the richest dude in the world. He is the richest dude in the world. He earned every bit of that. Why would I? That's a violation of your principle. You're not really consistent on your principle if you think it's okay to throw that principle out the window because you think that person, oh, well, they can afford it, or, well, they're rich enough, or what, or. Yada, yada. All right. This couple things here, because I will stay on this for the rest of the show if I don't make myself move, and because it makes me angry. And it should make you mad, too. You had 61% of Americans that paid zero federal income tax in 2020. That was a record year. And it's always the top 10% that pay the over 80% of all taxes. Can we talk about gender strategy for a minute?
What is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I have some totally not safe for air thoughts. So the vice president, the border czar, tweeted this, quote, "President Biden and I released our first ever national gender strategy. This is our vision for the future of our nation, one that is bold in strategy and one that this moment calls for." And you're like, what? I mean, yeah, there are Americans that are still trapped in Afghanistan, but tell us about gender strategy, right? We got a crisis at the border, but hey, what about the gender strategy? Can any of these people coming up with gender strategy tell us what a woman is? Curious. So here is the fact sheet on national strategy on gender equity and equality. Equity is not equality, by the way.
The what sheet?
Fact sheet. Oh. I know. Isn't it adorable? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I'm reading this. I'm not going to read this whole thing. So I'm supposed to believe that me as a woman, that I have, there's like some disparity. Strategy, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's intersectional, economic security. I noticed that in none of the proposals that they have for economic security, do they discuss how to maybe take less of people's money so that those people have it to invest in their own families, right? They hit a bunch. It's basically a bunch of nothingness is what it is. I don't know. I'm not even going to get involved in the whole gender strategy thing. Now, do I think that there are some there are some things that affect men and women differently? Yes, I'm in an industry that does. My voice registers differently than, and I'm talking about literally like the way a voice works, octave, pitch, everything. Women are naturally higher pitched than men. And there are different ways that registers. That's just a biological thing. I would rather take some of those differences than pretend that we have like this massive, we're hurtling into a matriarchy. I'm going to be honest with you. Women are bitches. I'm just going to be just straight. Don't go reach for your smelling salts because I said something that was true or I said the B word. I've told you before, I'm not Dora the Explorer. This ain't PBS. There's no bear in the big blue house. Just me. But it's true. This problem that we're having, it's a problem that we're now realizing with men. You have 60. There's some serious issues here. We're acting like women are victims, but yet over 60% of college grads now are women. You have fewer boys graduating from high school and attending college. You have more males that die of overdoses and suicide. This is just matriarchal garbage. You don't build up women by tearing down men. I'm going to tell you, if these positions were switched, people would be freaking out about what women would be dealing with here. And it's so troubling. Everyone sits here and talks about male privilege, like dying in conflict, male privilege, like dealing with overdoses and suicide. Male privilege, like being less represented and less, you want to talk about equity and equality? Men definitely don't get it in the courtroom when facing off against women. Oh, there's a number of things I can look at and people can absolutely weaponize protections against women and use that to their advantage. Is that male privilege everybody's talking about? I'm curious.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
So every day there's a new polling low for Joe Biden. I didn't even think this is something that's possible, but surprise, there is. So this, the new numbers that he's got, and this is actually, I missed this like coming in from today, the new numbers that he has, the average has dipped, according to 538, to 43%. Dude, it's getting lower. The last time we had it was 48. Now it's at 43. Oh my gosh, like how much lower does this go? Clap, 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 clap. Yeah, there you go. Oh boy, here we go with this. I'm so done. Dress whatever you want to, however you want for Halloween. The Anti-Defamation League is annoying parents with unsolicited quote-unquote advice by telling parents to avoid costumes that are culturally insensitive and perpetuate gender norms. You know what? I want to go as a giant inflatable middle finger, and I can just go and dance in front of everybody's offices that tell parents to ruin kids' Halloween with this crap. I'm so done, right? How is this? Wait a minute. Are we talking about the new four-star admiral, or are we talking about Halloween costumes? I'm curious. Like when they tell parents to avoid cultural appropriation or gender, are perpetuating gender norms, is that just for Halloween, or does that also include Biden staffers who end up becoming quote-unquote four-star admirals and are called the first woman that are... Oh, okay. I'm just asking for some friends that have vaginas. That's all. Also, pediatric vaccines will likely be available first or second week of November, according to the guy who used your money to weaponize Chinese bat viruses, lied about it to Congress, and demanded that you and your kids be locked down for an entire year at home while everybody who was sick and dying died alone. And then the whole time he was posing for magazine covers and starring on television movies, and my friend Sean Davis says, getting even richer. Yeah, Anthony Fauci. Thank you. That's right. Thank you. The White House delays the release of the JFK assassination files to protect against identifiable harm. That's interesting. Keep it with us. Keep it here. We got a lot of stuff to get into because my friend Adam Baldwin, the actor, is going to talk about that set and COVID and Alec Baldwin and so much more. Stick with us.
Your one-stop shop for the information you need to fight back. If you're going to have to learn stuff, you might as well enjoy it. The Dana Show.
DanaLash.com. Subscribe to that newsletter. It's good to be with you this Monday. We've been talking about a whole number of things and include, well, we've been talking about the Janet Yellen thing with the unrealized capital gains. We've been getting into some of this other policy stuff with the stopgap till December and the budget and reconciliation that's being debated about. But the other big thing that we've been discussing, the big cultural issue here, is this ongoing story involving Alec Baldwin and the killing of Helena Hutchins, who is was the director of photography for the latest film that he was doing, Rust. And the injured director, and more developments are coming out about this. Like, I just was reading a piece this morning where he apparently had been practicing a cross draw. And that's ultimately what one of the things that was happening as to how he ended up shooting Helena Hutchins. It's an all around tragic story. And as we discussed last hour, one of the things that I do reject is the idea that it's only the assistant director, it's only the armorer that bear responsibility, because first rule of firearm safety, and it doesn't matter, your celebrity doesn't absolve you of responsibility, is that you have to know where you have to be able to assume, first off, that your firearm's loaded and know what you're doing with it, for the love. Now, a lot of people are wondering, okay, well, on movie sets, how are they handling this? Because normally you have a lot of people who don't know how to deal with guns. And there was a story about how some of the coronavirus protocols may have actually made the set unsafe. So one of my good friends, Adam Baldwin, and I know you're familiar with him. Most everybody knows him as Animal Mother from Full Metal Jacket. But of course, he was on The Last Ship with NBC. He's done a number of films over the past, decades, and he's joining us via phone right now. And Adam, and you can find him on Twitter, too. I want to make sure I get that, at Adam Baldwin. He's not related to Alec Baldwin, just similar last name. But Adam, how are you, my friend? I'm glad you're joining us, and thanks for giving some of your insight on this.
Great, Dana. Thank you very much. Apparently, I'm a distant, long-ago cousin to the New York clan, but no relation anywhere near the last few generations.
Right. Well, we're glad that that's cleared up. We're glad it's cleared up. But let me pick your brain about this, because I know this is something that you have mentioned before, and I want to get into just some of like the mechanics on set. But there, I've been, so I was reading, I read a couple of different things this morning. One of the things I was reading was how some of the COVID protections, the virus protections, so-called protections, may have actually contributed to making the set less safe. How does that work? Like, what are made it more dangerous? Like, how does this happen?
Well, movie sets are generally compartmentalized even before COVID into the people that are shooting directly around the camera and the support crew and staff right around the camera. And then it extends outward from there. During COVID, it's been even more tightly compartmentalized into groups A, B, and C. A being the director, the producer, the actor, the direct people directly involved with those that are on camera not wearing masks. But I think that's led to a culture on set of even, you know, further segregation, if you will. For safety reasons, that's all claimed. It's all been approved by the unions and CDC guidelines and all that stuff. So people are, they're accommodating all those restrictions. I don't know. I have no insight onto what happened. I wasn't there, but right, I know that on the set that there was some dissension in the ranks, as has been reported, and there was some tension going on. And so I don't know whether the prop master was anywhere nearby. I don't know because of COVID. They could have been. They may have been. Apparently, this. So it's oftentimes the lead actor will call for what they call a private rehearsal, or just to set up a quieter rehearsal. When you have the cinematographer on the lens or right next to camera, not out at Video Village, and everyone's much more closely grouped to the camera, and then they spread out as they start rolling. So that's apparently what happened. The cinematographer was standing right behind the camera operator, and the director was right behind the cinematographer, and they were watching the monitor on top of the camera while Alec was practicing his cross draw and pulling the trigger. Why he didn't check to see if it was cleared, that's, you know, to me, that's just clear negligence. Everyone that is handling a firearm should know and is trained to check the weapon, clear the weapon, make sure that it's empty. The barrel, the breech, the magazine, and the cylinder of a revolver in this case.
Right.
Also, from what I understand, this is a period piece. So it had, apparently it was a single action revolver. You had to pull that hammer all the way back, and that makes the really light pressure on the trigger to release the round. So he didn't clear the weapon.
And that's, you know, the responsibility of the person who is handling the firearm. Talking to our friend Adam Baldwin, you know him from Last Ship, Firefly, as well as Full Metal Jacket, and he's kind of given us the breakdown on how something like this on the set of Rust, Alec Baldwin's film, where he had accidentally shot and killed this director of photography, injured the director. One of the things, Adam, that I had seen as well, because we know that there was some problems with the unions, and that they were saying it was an unsafe set. There apparently had been two misfires, but explain this to me. So I know that sometimes there are drills, like with actual, you know, like live fire drills that sometimes actors and actresses will do if, you know, actors aren't used to maybe shooting firearms and they're going to be, and they want to have them understand it, but that's never kept. And those rounds are never kept all together with, like, you know, blanks, which are very clearly visibly different. But apparently, according to one of the things I was reading, Yahoo was reporting the search warrant, etc., that apparently this was kind of all kept together. That's a big no-no. What is the standard operating procedure for this type of stuff, using firearms on a set, on a movie set like this?
Well, I'm just speculating, but it seems to me that this was right after lunch that the tragedy occurred, and they may have been firing. This is out in somewhat New Mexico desert area, or ranch land. They could have gone 1,000 yards downrange and been firing into a hillside and practicing with the weapon just to get a feel for it, or because it was cool or whatever it was. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to do it separately with oversight from a professional trainer. But it's inexcusable that any live ammo would be mixed in with the blanks. However, it's inexcusable not to check and see if your weapon is loaded.
Yeah. That's it.
I mean,
that,
I just presume, I presume whoever hands me a weapon, I check it. I don't care who it is.
And why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
why wouldn't you either? I saw a Daily Mail piece, and I've seen a number of stories where they're really trying to go after this armorer. And I made mention earlier, I really don't appreciate the way that they're going about it, number one. I mean, yes, there's some culpability there, but they're doing it in a way where it excuses Baldwin from any responsibility at all whatsoever. I mean, from what I understand, he was like the head producer on this film. He's the lead actor on this film. He's running the show. But even beyond that, when you're handed a firearm, whatever goes on at the business end of the barrel is your responsibility. And the fact that that you would even accept anything and then use it without even looking at it yourself, especially if after you've had two misfires on set and there have been a lot of issues raised about set safety with regards to dealing with firearms. And the fact that either he didn't know enough to do a simple press check and see what was chambered, if anything, and, you know, exactly what the round was, and then just like willy-nilly with his finger on the trigger, that is so unbelievably irresponsible. That's not how this stuff works. And you share that view.
Well, Alec Baldwin is 63 years old. He's been doing this for 40 years or more. He's had a gun in his hand on camera for decades. And he would know that protocol had been broken when the gun was handed to him and he didn't check it himself, or whoever was handing it to him didn't hand it to him opened so that he could see it and so that the people he was aiming at. It's common practice to show the people behind the camera, if you're pointing in that direction, see how empty this gun is. It's completely empty. Rack, 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 tap, tap, tap. It's empty.
Right.
Okay, everybody comfortable? Great. And he didn't do that. And I do resent the fact that she may have screwed up. I don't know who put that bullet in there. I don't know if other crew members were off shooting it because they were friends or pals. People get very chummy on sets like that, and it's a Western. Everyone thinks they're cool with these old guns. Like, let's go test it. And I'm sure you can get, it's New Mexico, which is not as strict as California. I'm sure you could go out to the local gun store and get some of these rounds, or maybe have a loader load it. And they went off and did that just to see what it felt like. But the bottom line is the gun was put on a cart and was picked up by a first AD, not an armorer. And somehow there was a live round mixed in. And the man who pulled the trigger didn't check the weapon ahead of time, period.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, and there's just no other way. Talking with our friend Adam Baldwin here, Firefly Last Ship. There's just no other way to get around that. I mean, ultimately, it comes down, and it's not mean to say that. I mean, that's just, you would be judged by the same standard, Adam. You would be judged by the same legal standard.
Oh, my house would be burned down by now. The thing is, this armorer in the media is now being crucified, and it reminds me of the way they treated Monica Lewinsky. They're trying to Lewinsky her, you know. I did not have manual relations with that weapon. It just seems so familiar. There's some sort of PR, you know. Carville's got his fingerprints all over this. There's a PR firm right behind this that's spinning it in the media, and it's disgusting.
It is. And I mean, the way that they're going after this woman, and she's in her 20s, and they're trying to make her look like some dumb gun bunny is what I think. That's what I said earlier. They're trying to make her look like some stupid gun bunny. But the thing is, too, is that it comes down to who pulled the trigger? Who was it that pulled the trigger and didn't check to see what was loaded and how it was loaded? Last question for you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, Andrew Branca, the Law of Self-Defense, has a wonderful video. He's a legal expert on firearm safety. He's got a great video out there that explains the whole thing. He'd be a great guest for you to have if this situation unfolds further.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think that this is going to change how... Because I already saw, and I can't remember who it was, one director's like, I'm never ever going to use like actual firearms on set again. It's only ever going to be like paint guns or pellet guns or something. Never going to use anything like this on set again.
Anytime you're at close range, those are used anyway. We have what are called non-guns, which are basically spark cap guns that just go and have a little spark at the end, and you CGI added in. Anytime there's close range work, that's what's used, or quarter loads at very close range with Lexan shields around the camera. Full loads are at distance, and full loads are good for semi-automatic and automatic weapons because you need the pressure to cycle the chamber, cycle the slide. and the bolt. Otherwise, it jams, and that slows things down, too. And if they want to go to airsoft and CGI because it's cheaper, I don't mind. You know, that's fine. You just act like it's going pew, pew, pew. But I think it's horrible that you would give armorers a bad name just because...
I agree.
An anti-gun activist is incompetent with a weapon and shoots and kills the cinematographer. You know, it's a horrible tragedy. I mean, clearly he didn't do it on purpose, but he did it out of negligence.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I completely agree with you about pinning it all on the armor with this, which I've seen even conservatives do. And it's frustrating to watch that happen because the way I think it's incredibly unfair. And I agree with you. I think that there's a PR firm involved here, and they're really spinning this. And I feel for this young woman who also, I mean, I feel for the young woman who lost her life, but I also feel for the young woman who's being targeted, this armor, because her life is over. She'll never work again. They're gonna tar and feather her name, and that's it. That is it. And then Baldwin, yeah, I'm sure, is going to be fine.
Well, we'll see. It depends on what the district attorney decides. Does he have a case?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't see how there aren't any charges in here. That's speculation on my part, but still. Adam Baldwin with Last Ship, Firefly, Full Metal Jacket, a million other things. Always so good to talk with you, my friend. I hope to see you again soon. It's been too long.
Thanks
so much for joining
us. Thanks, Dana. God bless.
Of course. God bless. Take care.
For over 40 years, Delta Rescue has provided dedication and everlasting love to animals that have been left abandoned. Delta is the largest no-kill and care-for-life animal sanctuary in the world. This super sanctuary is home to up to 1,500 animals that have been cruelly abandoned or born in the wilderness and cares for every animal for the entirety of that animal's life. Every animal at Delta Rescue receives the very best of care, and Delta relies solely on donor contributions from people like you for that care. By being a part of the Delta mission, you are the difference between life and death for so many of these animals. Donate today at deltarescue.org, or for more information on Delta's tax-saving estate planning, visit directly deltarescue.org/Dana and ask for my free estate package. It lays out all you need to know about growing your estate while letting your compassion for animals live well into the future. This is only available at deltarescue.org/Dana. Show your dedication and everlasting love and make your legacy work for the animals. Visit deltarescue.org/Dana today.
The Dana Show, sponsored by 30 years of game-changing Kel-Tec innovation, like the P50, a new breed of pistol. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Man, I've got so many insane headlines here. What the hell happened in Florida over the weekend? Jiminy Christmas, what in the world happened? Okay, so first off, we got, pull this up. I got some of these I can't read this one. I really want to so bad. First off, this is from a British publication, but it's they cite American sources though. This is in Florida, obviously. Florida Man. This guy's going to, he's trying to hang a Let's Go Brandon sign, but he has to pay a $50 fine each day for hanging a Trump 1 banner. Now, this is HOA suck. So Marvin Peavy. So he's a Florida man who's facing a $50 a day fine because he displayed a Trump 1 banner outside his home. And now he put up a Let's Go Brandon. And when I say he put up a Trump 1 sign outside of his home, it's literally like a three-story house. He's got three balconies, and he's hanging a giant... He can afford the $50 a day. He's the real MVP right now, Marvin Peavy. He's got a Trump 1 banner that hangs down like three... I'm so glad that somebody has three balconies. God bless America. Northwest Florida Daily News said he put up the banner to provoke, quote, seaside liberals, but asserted that it's not political. And so this is the 30A corridor. I love 30A. Yay! So they say that it's violating a code that prohibits residents in the 30A corridor from displaying streamers, feather flags, pennants, ribbons, spinners, blah, 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 that could distract from the area's natural beauty of Florida Man. And so now he added a Let's Go Brandon one too. He's the real MVP, Marvin Peavy. We like him. So I never met the dude, but now he seems like he's a party, right? He's a party. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to add another banner. One Florida man who won $1 million lottery. You know, you win $1 million. That's a lot of money. Of course, the state's going to take a big chunk of it.
Oh yeah.
Well, and actually, maybe not Florida. They don't got income tax. Well, they'll still probably get some.
Yeah.
Anyway, he got a $20 scratch-off ticket, won $1 million. His big plans, quote, I'm just looking forward to upgrading to an electric toothbrush and splurging on a good pair of flip-flops. That is Florida man Brian Nelson. He's keeping it real, man. Get you a good pair of Havaianas. That's what you'll get, man. Get you a nice electric toothbrush. Friends, we're on the brink of an economic crisis, really. I mean, thanks to the economic policies and the jobless numbers, that everything's been abysmal. Inflation is starting to increase. We're seeing supply chain disruptions. It's kind of crazy. Instead of following the former president's pro-business agenda that had the economy booming, now the new administration wants to tax corporations, tax small businesses, pass trillion-dollar bills that we can't pay for. You need to take proactive steps to protect your wealth and your retirement by investing in gold and precious metals, and legacy precious metals can help. Washington keeps printing money and it devalues your dollar. Gold offers you a hedge against inflation. As the dollar gets weaker, gold gets stronger. So the folks at Legacy Precious Metals are the gold standard when it comes to investing in precious metals. They have a team of experts who can counsel you on the best options for you and your family. Don't leave your retirement to chance. Call Legacy Precious Metals at 866-580-2088 or visit them online to download their free investor's guide that's full of all kinds of useful information at legacypminvestments.com. Visit Legacy letter P, letter M, investments.com.
We don't have time to be wasting on these phony, trumped-up culture wars, this fake outrage that right-wing media is peddles to juice their ratings, and the fact that he's willing to go along with it instead of talking about serious problems that actually affect serious people, that's a shame. That's not what this election's about.
So
that's not what you need.
That's Virginia. Former President Barack Obama, who is in Virginia campaigning on behalf of Terry McAuliffe. Oh, man. Welcome back to the show. DanaLash.com at DLash on Twitter. Follow the new. I'm there until they force me out. That's how it works. I don't give up any ground. So I don't want to hear and then you can also follow my radio show account over there. DanaLash Radio. Obama just called the rape of a freshman girl in her high school bathroom a trumped up fake outrage. Sure as hell's not a trumped up fake outrage to that 9-year-old girl. It's not a trumped up fake outrage about with the dad, right? Good heavens. I don't think that's going to go over so well. It's not trumped up fake outrage, the fact that you had the National School Board Association working with the White House before they sent that their request over to the DOJ. That's not trumped up fake outrage. The trumped up fake outrage are the people who are insisting that there's no other place for that, or this critical race theory. Those are the people who are pushing the institutionalized Marxist racism. That's their trumped up fake outrage. Goodness. Now, on the heels of this, of course, comes this Rolling Stone piece that we got to talk about. And this Rolling Stone piece, I don't know if you've read it. I read some of it. It's garbage, like all articles from the Rolling Stone are. The Rolling Stone magazine, they came out with this piece and it said exclusive. January 6th protest organizers say they participated in dozens of planning meetings with members of Congress. This is all the stuff they're saying. They said that they and that White House staff and all of this, excuse me, that they had a promise from the White House, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So I read this stupid article. And keep in mind, this is the same Rolling Stone that fabricated and accused a fraternity over at UVA of rape when, in fact, it had been entirely made up. They had to retract that, right? So they were accused of rape. And they ran that story. And then you have the story of the ivermectin stuff that they completely also fabricated and ran. I mean, they should have dozens of reactions here. And I'm looking at this last graph of this, too. So in this story that they have for January 6th, don't forget they also put Tsarnaev on the cover, one of the Boston bombers. They gave him the Tiger Beat thing. They actually literally say in the bottom of their article that these were all public meetings and they actually were talking about voting. They didn't talk about anything else. They were talking about voting. These weren't private, secretive meetings. This wasn't any of that, of course. And then there's the piece that shows that there was a federal agent involved in apparently the organization of all this stuff, which is also crazy. But this was supposed to be this bombshell, but it's a total just flat fart. That's all it is. It was completely public. Like, this is what they have in their story. They said that two sources planned a series of demonstrations. This was all the whole Stop the Steal thing. And they said that there were two, the people who did the Stop the Steal thing were having conversations with members of Congress, etc. This is what they're saying is the collusion. So yeah, they had Lauren Boebert out of Colorado speak at one of the Stop the Steal things. That does not mean that she was planning her or Mo Brooks or Andy Biggs or Louis Gohmert or any of these people. They said that the organizer said, yeah, we talked to Boebert's team, we've talked to Cawthorn's team, Gosser's team, you know, etc. These are public discussions that were already public. And they're repackaging it to make it seem like it's like a private, they were having these private clandestine meetings. And they actually weren't at all whatsoever. This is a total, it's trending. And you have all of these Democrats and their surrogates in the press, everybody sharing the piece. There's a difference between public legal meetings and secret conspiracy collusion meetings that are planning a terrorist attack. There's a huge difference. Rolling Stone wants you to think that what was already public knowledge and is just repackaged nothing was somehow like a secret conspiracist thing for a terror attack. They have zero evidence at all whatsoever in this piece. They don't provide a single bit of evidence that there's any kind of collusion or conspiracy. And again, this was the same FBI. You know that they were so desperate to get indictments out of this. They were forced to conclude that there was zero collusion or organization after their investigation. Zero. But what's interesting, let me pull this up, is I was reading this Twitter thread from a former White House official and teaches apparently over at University of Chicago, Darren Beatty. And he's got a piece over at Revolver that gets into the federally protected provocateur who appears to have led the very first 1/6 attack on the U.S. Capitol. And there was this in the White House hearing, and this was back on, this was actually a week or so ago, when Merrick Garland was before the House and was being questioned on a number, mainly the big topic that they were being questioned on and what most everybody talked about was the whole DOJ and parents, domestic terrorists, etc. But Thomas Massie was asking him about this guy named Ray Epps. And Ray Epps was apparently this guy that nobody really knows. He was telling people to enter the U.S. Capitol building, and he was shepherding people through the Capitol on January 6th. And so it's a really weird story. This is over at Revolver. And they said Revolver has this caveat. They're like, if Revolver News's previous reporting points to a proactive role of the federal government in relation to conspiracy cases, you know, the Ray Epps story suggests a similar yet egregious, explicit, direct, and immediate degree of federal involvement. Now, we know for a fact that FBI undercover agents were involved in leading and hatching the Whitmer plot. That was the plot to go. And that's not me being a conspiracy theorist. It seems so weird to even say this on air. You had a bunch of people who opposed Gretchen Whitmer and they were going to protest, and you had a number of agents involved who were leading them to actually and helped. They organized them into this like national group, and they were encouraging them to go kidnap her. That's like more than entrapment. So, and it was like the FBI and a lot of those people that were involved started dropping out of that group because they didn't want to kidnap anybody. But you had an agent that was pushing it. So and it's a long video, so I'm not going to play the whole thing, but it's really weird because Massie was asking him, and he was like, well, what about the guy, you know, who was saying that he'll probably go to jail, probably be arrested, but they need to go into the Capitol, and he's directing people in the Capitol. Have you seen the video or frames? And Garland's like, well, we're not going to comment on pending investigations. And that's what he kept saying. But Garland did not want to answer Thomas Massie's question. And he wouldn't even actually look at Massey when he was speaking to him, which was very different from when he would get mad and he would look, you know, stare down some of these lawmakers when he was answering these questions. The FBI removed Ray Epps from their Capital Violence Most Wanted list on July 1st. And that really interested a lot of people because Revolver did a piece on this like a while ago, back in like, I think, what, June? And on July 1st, a day after Revolver ran their story, the FBI took this guy off the list. And apparently he was working alongside some people who are unindicted, interestingly enough. They wanted to carry out a breach of police barricades and go into inside the Capitol. And there's all these pictures of this, and they found like all this, you know, all this stuff where, you know, he's this guy's from Arizona and all of this. And but there's a lot of questions around this, and there's a very long piece. So the thing is they think that the guy's like working with the government on this. That's the thought that they're coming. And there's a lot of information here. It is enough to, it doesn't just beg the question. It presents a legitimate premise that deserves an answer from the Bureau. And they've got receipts. I mean, there's so many things in here. They've got records. They've got phone call records. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff here. This would not, I'm not surprised by anything anymore. At all whatsoever, because this is, I mean, and this is a great piece of journalism here. They're asking, they don't know why the federal government is protecting this guy. He's a mystery guy. And people are wondering, why is the federal government protecting this guy? Is this an undercover agent? But then why would he use his own name? I don't know. There's a lot of, but I think that the Bureau needs to answer questions, especially after the Bureau was involved in the Whitmer thing. And, you know, this is not beyond the realm. I'm completely inclined. I used to not ever be inclined to believe stuff like this. Now I am. I am after 2016 and after the FBI actually changed emails from the CIA identifying Carter Page as a CIA asset. And, ran with the false information anyway because they wanted a wiretap. So after that, I believe almost anything I see now. I'm like, yeah, it could be possible, or at least entertain it. Could be totally possible. That's interesting. I think there are a lot of questions that need. When do American citizens get to hold hearings for some of these people? We should be able to send up questions and have the House just ask those questions. House members ask these questions. There's a lot of very interesting things here. I'm going to put this in this article in your prep. It is so long and there's so much stuff here, but you can come to your own conclusion. But I think, especially now that you have Rolling Stone trying to push this garbage and use this repackaged nothingness that was already public info and try to act like, oh, we got some conspiracist material. Yeah, I think it's definitely apropos to bring up the question about some of these people who, you know, have these FBI relations. And I mean, just like the last rally that they had, There was an undercover FBI agent or undercover federal agent that was arrested, and then they let him go. He showed his badge on camera. He was a federal agent. They had all these undercover agents that were there. There were more undercover agents there at that damn rally than there were actual people who were coming out for a rally. It was completely, you had the feds there. You had Fed boys there all over.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Okay, so I'm curious as to why the United Nations hasn't called for the release of the Uyghurs in China, because they're saying that they condemned, so Sudan, who we're going to talk to, they had a coup that they dealt with. They called for their prime minister's immediate release. We'll talk to Stephen Yeats about that. But they said that UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Monday condemned the military takeover in Sudan, called for leaders to be free. They said that Prime Minister Hamdok and all the other officials must be released immediately, but no word from them. It's very interesting. They haven't had like any remarks on any of that in China. Very, very curious. So thousands of state workers in California, very interesting headline. They are, California apparently is not testing thousands of them for the virus as required. This is 3 months after Newsom required state workers to be fully vaccinated or undergo weekly testing. Apparently, that's not happening. California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, fewer than a third of the who cares? They're outside dealing with damn fires. Stop. And even if you're injected, it doesn't stop transmission. This is a fact from the CDC. So all the people who are like have a, you know, are fetishizing corporate censorship, just hi, real, follow the science. A disgruntled employee was sentenced to 6 months in prison for releasing rats at his workplace. So basically what Joe Biden did to us. This comes from MSN. They said that a disgruntled employee was sentenced to 6 months in prison for releasing rats at his workplace. Of course, it's an Irishman. An Irish man. Part of my ancestry is Irish, so I come by it honest. I feel like this guy and I might be friends. 61-year-old Irishman. I can't do the accent, though, very well. Not very well. Only a little well. He was sentenced to 6 months in prison, according to BBC. John O'Neill, he brought rats to Cork County Council's offices. He had a dispute with a manager. He's literally caught on closed-circuit television and everything doing this. Oh, he's going to be in trouble. Of course he is. I don't want to read this headline. There's a flesh-eating STD that causes really disgustingly described red sore spreading in the UK. So don't be a skank, men and women. You both can be, right? Like, you know, just be, don't be like those koalas, right? Because the koalas, don't be like them. I'm not reading it. It's a disgusting description. I'm not reading this. Tens of millions of filthy used medical gloves were imported into the United States. Did they come from the CCP? I'm just asking because I wouldn't be surprised. They said that there were trash bags full of used medical gloves, some visibly soiled, even bloodstained. They said that on litter of the floor of a warehouse in Bangkok, nearby is a plastic bowl filled with blue dye and gloves. Apparently, people have been trying to make gloves look new again and then sending them off to be sold. I actually made sure the ones I got were made in the USA and I paid a heck of a lot more for it. And that was when I first ordered them several years ago because I'm always prepared. Always, thank you. I even have like fire extinguishers everywhere. I am like ready to rock. Man, I got like the quick clot. I got like the set, the pow, everything. You name it, I got it. All right, we got Stephen Yates because everything I have is disgustingly health related. And it's all nasty stuff. So I can't. Stick with us. We're going to talk about some foreign policy here.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's Chapter and Verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
Danalash.com. So make sure you go subscribe to that newsletter. Okay, so I was reading just about, you know, I'm looking at everything that's happening. We're right here on what? A hyperinflation. You have China and Russia creating and testing hypersonic missiles, China testing two of them, well, two separate ones, apparently. We left a bunch of Americans in Afghanistan. We can't even get anything. We had a bunch of those shipping crates, like 40 of them fall into the Pacific, and some of the ships were on fire. There goes your Christmas presents that you ordered for your all kids. Oh, my goodness. And the vice president and the president are focused on, let me get this right, national gender strategy. Oh, and don't forget, Sudan had a coup, and they were an Abraham Accord signer. So what's that? What's going to happen there? All of this we bring and lay before our guest, Stephen Yates, who is the foreign policy expert. Not a foreign policy expert, ladies and gentlemen. He's hated by communists. They didn't like him when he ran Radio Free Asia. He previously advised former Vice President Dick Cheney in the Bush White House. He's a hated man, valuable man, and he joins us now from his Minecraft bunker in an undisclosed location. Stephen Yates at YatesComs on Twitter. Always good to see you, my friend. So that is the big question, though. Sudan has a coup. They detained they've arrested their prime minister. What does that do to the Abraham Accords? Because they were a signer on that. So that was like the only reason that we stopped designating them as a state sponsor of terror. What changes now?
Well, it is a big question about where things go in the sort of broader Middle East, where we've kind of had, I think, the inertia pulled somewhat in the right direction, despite the political transition in the United States. The Abraham Accords fundamentally were kind of driven by interests in the region themselves. The United Arab Emirates had a pretty profound impact on trying to get things over the finish line. And they were among the early ones to establish formal diplomatic relations with the state of Israel. It's conspicuous. There haven't really been any additions to that. It started out about a little over a year ago and had sort of a quick bam, bam, bam set of initial diplomatic relations established. And there's really been quiet since. And so if the Sudan happens to fall into disarray, a state of somewhat disappointing grace they've lived in for decades now, that could pull one of those parties back potentially. But no early signs that this instability in Sudan is driven by foreign policy. It's probably just driven by the same things that have pulled that poor country apart for too long.
Yeah, and I was looking at the timeline. I was reading a piece, I think this was Reuters, actually, as to how this all happened. Because, I mean, I think after that, after they had signed and they were no longer designated a terror state, they weren't really in, they didn't really get a lot of attention anymore. And I think that, I don't know if, I mean, I know that there are a lot of factors contributing to this, but it just seems like there's a lot of things falling apart. And Afghanistan continues to spiral. And another piece said that Afghanistan was near collapse. I would just think that the Taliban rolling through meant that it was collapsed. I mean, I don't know how much more collapse you can get. But how are the Abraham Accords going to fare through this administration? Because I do think that peace through strength and having strong leadership does stem off. It does stem off a lot of this stuff. Are they going to fall apart? I mean, for real, like how much longer are we going to have Abraham Accords now without a strong White House leader?
Well, I think it's difficult without a strong White House leader. At the same time, I think the other parties that have established normal diplomatic relations are pretty committed to keeping them going. There's been pretty substantial trade and investment increases between some of those Gulf partners and the state of Israel. There's been a couple of things that have remained kind of trilateral gatherings and announcements. The United States might be a somewhat passive participant in this at this point. I wish it were not so, because I think it was really fundamental to changing the frame through which we look at the future of the Middle East, not one driven by terrorist demands from the Palestinian territories or terrorist demands from the state sponsor we call Iran, but fundamentals of economic engagement, diplomatic recognition, and building peace through common prosperity was not really a new idea, but it's one that hadn't been tried in decades in the Middle East. And so that's important. I think there's still enough inertia to keep that going. We just don't want something like this to happen with more than one party. And we don't even really want it happening with the Sudan.
Yeah, they're very true. Talking with our friend Stephen Yates. You can follow him on Twitter at YatesComms. So China and Russia. Tokyo is very concerned over these drills that they've been carrying out. They've wrapped them up. They wrapped them up these last week. They've held the first joint patrol in the Western Pacific. They had a number of their vessels doing these joint maritime military exercises. So clearly, Russia and China are aligned. And they're making that very well known. Japan's very concerned about this. And yet still, we're focusing on, what was it? Let me pull this tweet up. I want to make sure I get it correct. National Gender Strategy, Stephen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the State Department did celebrate National Pronouns Day or something like that.
Yes.
Recently. So we're really high on top of global priorities and staring down dangerous adversaries by dealing with ourselves, for lack of a better way of putting it, on different days that we recognize the international calendar. This is mostly theater when it comes to what Russia and China are doing, but it's a big theatrical middle finger at Japan, which is among the most peaceful of countries in the world and is a threat to absolutely no one. Only the Chinese try to pretend as if Japan is a real problem or a threat. That's only projection on their part because they want to draw the white hot spotlight away from themselves as the real threat. These patrols were sort of in the north. If you thought that North Korea was going to have an outbreak and you wanted to try to hem them in. But what is the common foe that China and Russia were trying to deal with? There hasn't been some great Manchurian strategy to divide Russia and China and retake the motherland of Asia. So this is mostly theater. And it's one of those things where when they flex like this, and we do nothing, it erodes the value of alliances. And that's really, really a disappointment, given that Japan has been kind of hosed when it came to the Olympics because of COVID, which came from China. And it kind of gets treated like an extra stepchild at the table when it comes to our global alliances, when it's a major economy and a truly responsible stakeholder.
Yeah, very much so. Talking with our friend Stephen Yates. And I know we did some naval drills with Japan. I think New Zealand had some participation in that. But that seemed more or less the way that I interpreted that. And correct me if I'm wrong, that was routine, that we've done that quite frequently. But this is the first time that we've seen such kind of exercises from Russia and China, correct?
Right. And it is something that we do with other partners also. It's not something that in terms of practice is unprecedented by global partners around the world.
Right.
It's different when Russia and China do it. It's also different because when we do it, it's with our Japanese and Korean and other allies to send a signal to North Korea, which is a non-status quo power, as Diplo speak goes, which means they're the threat. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to do something to push back against a threatening party. When we have these patrols, say with British or others going through the Taiwan Strait, that's to brush back the People's Liberation Army, Navy, or Air Force of China, the People's Republic of China, because they are the non-status quo power that's trying to threaten people. But what is the point of them doing this? There's no threat emanating from anywhere right. against them militarily in that part of the world. So it's basically, as I say, theater, kind of absurd, but it's basically meant to deliberately insult people. And if you just let them do it, it just gets worse.
You've tweeted about some of the NBA stuff. Inez Kanter, who went after Xi Jinping. He got in some trouble. And the Chinese government saying Tibet belongs to the Tibetan people. China thinks everything belongs to it. And I love the language that they're trying to use to describe Taiwan, for instance, saying that they're secessionists and basically saying that they're like the Asian equivalent of the Confederacy, I guess, which doesn't make any sense. But you had tweeted this out as well. Inez Kanter did a video. This takes some brass. He did a video, "Dear brutal dictator Xi Jinping and the Chinese government." This guy doesn't play. Now he's getting punished for this. He wore the T-shirt. It's a great video. And now he's in trouble for it. Your thoughts?
He is. But he is sort of the light and righteous side of the pro sports kind of theater that we've had. He's the opposite of a Kaepernick taking a knee.
Oh, yeah.
He is someone who's actually standing up against oppression. This will hurt him financially. This will hurt him professionally, but he has a soul, he has integrity, he has eyes that see, and he has a mouth that speaks truth. All I can do is just salute and say thank you to someone who may be inconsequential when compared to King James when it comes to the business end of the NBA, but this guy has more flex than John Cena and King James combined. And I hope that everyone sort of looks at this guy and says, yeah, whatever happened to people who are privileged in life, like stars, speaking up for the little man, the oppressed, those who are victims of genocide? Good grief.
That, you know, that moves and putting this from, not to be very sterilized with my response, but to look at this from, you know, a capitalist, you know, merching this out kind of angle, because I know the NBA loves that. I mean, when I see stuff like this, because I don't follow NBA very much. I used to really like college basketball, and then I got very, very busy. But when I see stuff like this, I'm like, I would buy all of your shirts if I knew they weren't made by Uyghurs in the Xinjiang province.
Yeah.
I would totally buy all your merch. I would watch you. I would watch every game you played. I would be so into that, because that camaraderie, fellow Americans standing up and taking a stand. We used to have that, like back in the day when we had people like Marlena Dietrich and all of these other celebrities and everybody else that would take a stand, whether it was against Hitler or Nazis or fascism or whatever. And now it's like it's the opposite. And it's so rare to see these celebrities and these athletes do this, but that moves people. People love rallying around and being the underdog and fighting, you know, and taking a stand against, you know, stuff like this. But I wish that they would realize, Stephen, how much money they would make if they actually showcased that.
And it has the added virtue of being good and true.
Right.
It used to be on almost every college campus, and certainly around every polite Hollywood gathering, there would be some kind of free Tibet merch. There used to be a rainbow-like bumper sticker talking about Tibet. And probably 99 out of 100 Americans couldn't tell you what Tibet was, where it was, or anything. But they were for its freedom, of course.
Yeah.
And so there is actual profit to be made if people wanted to be sensible about it. But it actually, you know, marketing the truth and the things that are good, that's fine. And it actually should be something that we build up positive momentum towards the things that are right, instead of being enslaved by having to compromise the words we use, the people we engage. I mean, I watched John Oliver do his rant about Taiwan. Some of it was good, but it's not necessarily the source we should be going to about historical truth or policy prescriptions. But he still talks about walking kind of namby-pamby around things because, oh, the Chinese might want to fight us. Well, you know what? If we got wise about this, we're way bigger, stronger, and there's more of us in the world. It's we who should be putting pressure on China to play by our rules. And we just got to man up and do it.
Last quick question for you, though. But those hypersonic missiles.
Yeah. Well, my bet is if we want to do a Rocket Man versus Rocket Man comparison, that ours are bigger than theirs. And this really comes down to seriousness of purpose. We don't want war or conflict, but we should be making no bones about it, that they should be. We should be sowing division within China, that this is an irresponsible, racist, offensive government that does not have their best interests at heart, and a much better path is out there for the Chinese people if they move in the right direction. I think that's what the communist government fears most of all, and we should make them more afraid of it.
Yeah, that's why they have social media banned there, unless they control it. Very interesting when you compare to what's trying to happen here. Stephen Yates, always so good to talk with you, my friend. I hope you have a great week. At Yates Comms, go follow him on Twitter. He's got great insight. Stephen, as always, appreciate you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
Of course, you too.
The Dana Show.
You Dana can't have mad scientists running around playing God like this and then come to find out what else is Fauci and NIH doing. They're doing cruel experiments on puppies. What they were doing with those puppies is flat out disgusting. It's despicable. That needs to stop. I cannot believe American tax dollars would go to treat those dogs the way those dogs were be treated. And, you know, I really think Fauci needs to be held accountable.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy, and that's a good guy, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, America's dad. Yeah. And it's Governor Dad, Ron DeSantis, even though actually he's like, could be my brother, not really me, you know, but talking about this, and he's completely, absolutely 1,000% correct. And we had banned gain of function research. These people funded it. And then there was a lab leak, pandemic, and then everybody lied about it, and they labeled everybody else as racist. And then, of course, the same people who were doing all of this were testing on animals. I can't hardly talk about this story because you guys know where I am on this. Like, I think that animal abuse, I may differ from some other conservatives. I'm a hardcore conservationist, not an environmentalist, because I follow science and believe in fact. But I also think that people who are usually ignorant to animals end up being serial killers. And I don't care if you're a medical researcher or not. There's nothing that justifies this. Nothing at all. And our tax dollars fund it. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting and inexcusable. And people should be held accountable. Today in stupidity, Kane. I'm going to get hot. Woo!
All right. Believe it or not, wow, our president again makes it on Today in Stupidity. He was in front of children in a classroom, and he was talking about the media. And listen to this.
You know, when you're president, see all these people here? They're with you all the time. They get to ask you all kinds of questions, and you try to figure out how you can avoid answering them sometimes.
Well, yeah, at least
he does. That's what he does. He did it during the campaign, and he does it now.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the way he does it.
Make sure you sign up for that newsletter. I got some stuff going on for you today. And I am expected to be on Fox's primetime this evening. I'll have info about that in the newsletter. Have a great night, folks. My friend Meghan McCain joins me on the show tomorrow.